Jazz up your life Sunday to Thursday with Yo Dai on All That Jazz. Now we like to do a wonderful little
ballad, a definitely jazz. 1977年，吉他手 Parmasini 和键盘手 Leo Mays 组建了 Parmasini Group， 他们最早将电子合成器运用到音乐创作当中。1980年，两位年轻的音乐家决定在 ECM 唱片公司旗下推出一张二重奏专辑，这不是传统意义上的二重奏，他们两个人决定做一次全新的大胆尝试，将 Parmasini Group 所开辟的音乐道路更深入地延展到用音乐来营造情绪和氛围的领域。科技的进步给音乐家带来了更多的可能性，他们在专辑当中使用了80年代初刚刚出现的电子合成器和鼓机，并且尝试颠覆传统爵士乐当中即兴的概念，不再是某一件乐器的独奏，而是不同段落之间的转换。乐曲的开始，背景是人群喧闹的声音， Parmasini 弹奏的如同脉搏一样跳动的 bass 给人带来一种新的事物正在酝酿之中，充满了神秘的未知的感觉。接下来 Parmasini 空灵的电吉他仿佛是一只大手，带领你走出嘈杂的人群，在你脑海里展现出一幅巨大的电影银幕的画面，开阔的荒原，远处的群山，一条延展的公路，空旷而又寂寞，通往远方。 接下来两位声音冒险家给我们带来了新鲜的元素，在当时鼓机还没有被广泛使用，更不用说爵士音乐家了。在这里鼓机的使用非常简单，一个固定的节奏在一个固定的模式下延续着，就像是一辆匀速行驶在长长的公路上的汽车，是一个移动的点。接下来出现的是专辑当中的第三位音乐家，来自巴西的天才打击乐手 Nana Vasconcelos。 他使用带有原始气息的来自非洲的古老乐器 Talking Drum， 仿佛是远古和现代的对话。 刚才在乐曲高潮出现的这一段架子鼓也很有意思，当时没有设计有鼓手在乐队当中，他们在录音的时候，帕玛西尼突然感到这一段高潮需要一段鼓的独奏，于是他发现在录音棚里边有一套架子鼓，但是他们都不是鼓手。帕玛西尼问来自巴西的打击乐手娜娜会不会打架子鼓，娜娜说她不会，于是帕玛西尼自己尝试坐到架子鼓前面去打，但是打得并不是很好，于是娜娜说那还不如我来打，最后就录了这一段非常出色的架子鼓的部分。在下面的录音当中突然出现了 Lyle 的数数的人声，这是 ECM 的老板也是专辑的制作人 Manfred Eich 在混音的时候错误的把 Lyle 为了记小节数而事先录的人声漏了出来，结果造成了一个无比奇妙的意外。更神奇的是1988年一款著名的香水广告用了 Lyle 数数的这30秒，让 Lyle 收到了他人生当中数目最大的一张支票。55在乐曲结尾的部分，背景出现男人的声音，是 ECM 著名的录音师 Jan Erik。 有一天 Erik 在录音棚里边用挪威语读报纸上的新闻， Pat Massini 听到以后觉得太酷了，于是就把它录了下来。这位读报的 Erik 是爵士乐历史上最优秀的录音师，仅仅是 ECM 唱片公司就有超过400张专辑上印着他的名字。这首长达20分钟的作品有着一个非常奇特的名字，其实它是一个文字游戏 As Falls Wichita So Falls Wichita Falls。 Wichita 是 Kansas 州最大的城市，而在 Texas 州有一个著名的 Wichita 瀑布 Wichita Falls。 这个有意思的名字实际上是来自曾经和 Pamassini 合作过的贝斯手 Steve Swallow。 Steve 是一个非常有幽默感的人，他在年轻的时候想成为一名诗人而不是音乐家，他特别会给自己的乐曲起名字让人过而不忘，比方说 I think my wife is a hat。 他在60年代曾经写过一首乐曲并命名为 As Falls Wichita So Falls Wichita Falls， 但是这首乐曲一直没有正式录音，所以他本人几乎也把这首乐曲忘了。当 Pat Massini 在录制这首乐曲的时候突然想到了 Steve Swallow 的乐曲的名字，于是就打电话给 Steve 问他能不能使用这首乐曲的名字。 Steve Swallow 非常高兴地同意了，于是在这张专辑的内页里边 Pat Massini 专门向 Steve Swallow 表示感谢。1980年9月15日，当 Pat Massini 和 Lyle Mays 在奥斯陆的录音棚里边录制这张专辑的时候，突然听到一个噩耗，就是著名的爵士钢琴演奏家 Bill Evans 不幸去世。 Bill Evans 是给 Lyle Mays 影响最大的音乐家，于是他在录音棚里边即兴录制了向他的偶像 Bill Evans 致敬的这首乐曲 September 15th。
September 15th is a piece that is actually a combination of a couple different things, and it sort of is all under the banner of being a tribute to a musician who was very important for both Lyle and I, Bill Evans. And we dedicated it to him for a very specific reason, which is while we were there recording, Bill died. Of course, with Lyle, Bill, I think, has an immediate connection, you know, just in terms of the pianistic style that Lyle plays in, which I think, you know, is directly connected to Bill's way of playing. And for me, as not only a player, also as a composer, and this is true with Lyle too, I think Bill's way of sort of invoking that whole sort of French romantic harmonic language and reconciling that with the jazz tradition is a huge element in what has become the way both Lyle and I approach music. And somehow the pieces that came together to make that track be what it is are connected to Bill's thing somehow.
September 15th is a little different way of approaching a jazz duo ballad, in that the opening material is not so much to function as a head to be improvised on. It's its own sort of mood piece. It's more like a classical guitar concerto, adagio. One of the things that's always impressed me is just the extreme technique that Pat has, the control that he has. So he can play material like that, and it's totally believable. There's a real challenge to playing something that sparse, something that simple, and having it come out that evocative.
The piece starts out with a statement of a melody that was one of the first things Lyle brought to the group when we first started. We never played it live, but when he first got the Oberheim four-voice synth and could play chords, I remember him doing that piece, and he had sort of an oboe kind of melody that went with it, which I ended up substituting on the guitar.
The synth bed underneath that was written for a four-part string section, and I recorded each of the lines separately with all of the oscillators of the Oberheim four voice on just a single note with a volume pedal so that each part had its own expressive quality. And at the end, it's a little bit more like a string section in approach. Somehow it works in the context of the record. It fits with the sonic environment that we've heard previously.
And then we built this transition piece that's that real nice little prophet synth melody that leads into this three-quarter waltz tune, which was a tune that I had originally written for the group Oregon. Oregon was going to do a record where they were going to play music of other composers, and I was touring at the time with Gary Burton. We did a lot of concerts opposite Oregon, and in fact, Ralph Towner used to come out and play with us. So I wrote this piece for them, and I think they even recorded it, but somehow it didn't get on the record, or they didn't get a version they liked, or something like that. But that piece had been floating around for a while, and I thought it would be a great duet piece for Lyle and I to play, which ended up being really true.
the tune in three is one of those charming 3-4 things that was designed to get us to a third section, again, that was not nailed down. It was open-ended. And then, you know, the tape recorder was still running and the written music had run out, so we're just improvising. The challenge was to not solo on anything, but to solo in such a way that the whole conglomeration of written material made sense as a piece. It's a different kind of improvisation. It's more compositional improvisation. And the interaction with Pat, too, is just so tasty. The choices he made as to when to come in, what to emphasize or play along with was just marvelous, and we got lucky.